Ladies and gentlemen, we're happy to see you on the conference dedicated to the first half of 2017 IFRS financial results. Today, the conference will be recorded. I give floor to Vladimir Jukov, Vice President for Investor Relations. You're welcome, sir. Good afternoon. We're happy to see you on our teleconference today. Let me introduce our speakers today. Serhiy Dyachenko, First Vice President, COO, Sergey Malyshev, Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, Anton Berman, Head of Strategic Marketing. We have some more top managers from the financial domain. We are ready. Now I'm giving floor to Serhiy Dyachenko, Chief Operating Officer.
Good afternoon. We are starting our presentation with our safety operations. You can see at page three, the company managed in the first half of 2017, managed to have decent performance in terms of reducing general incident rates. We reduced fatalities considerably. However, many of you heard that in July there was a serious fatality accident on our mine in Norilsk, and we lost four workers, unfortunately. With this factor in mind, our statistics is pretty close to our past year's performance. Nevertheless, the company keeps working to reduce incidents, improve the safety culture. We conduct internal external audits, engaging world-class companies. We keep implementing high standards of safety, and we hope that our results will be even better in the future. I give floor to Sergey Malyshev.
Thank you, Sergey. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me briefly introduce the key financials. Our revenue amounted to $4.2 billion, up 11% year-on-year, mainly due to increase in metal prices. EBITDA amounted to $1.7 billion, down 3% year-on-year. The key reason was considerable appreciation of ruble in the reporting period and also one-off expenses related to our social projects. EBITDA margin was 41%, which is among highest in the market. Our CapEx was almost flat year-on-year, which is $0.7 billion. Our CapEx guidance for the full year is the same, $2 billion. Net working capital amounted to $805 million, up 82% due to performance obligations under the contract to purchase cupriferous feedstock with Rostec. Free cash flow amounted to $0.5 million, which is 17% below the past year's performance due to working capital dynamics. Cash flow to revenue amounted 12%. Our net debt to EBITDA grew from 1.2 to 1.5, and the key trigger was the payout of interim dividends in January for an amount of $1.2 billion. In July, after the reporting period, we paid out final dividends for the full year 2016 for a total of $1.2 billion, which is around $7.5 per share. In January, the board of directors approved the sale of 39.32% share in the Chita project, and the transaction is expected to be closed until the year-end. Given the increase in the debt burden, we tried to improve our debt parameters. We used the favorable environment in the global financial market and implemented a number of successful transactions at very low interest rates, and I'll describe it later in the financial section. I give floor to Anton Berman. Thank you. On the page six, we have the consolidated vision of our metal sales. As you can see, we have different trends. Nickel moved from the balance market. It is increasing in demand. It will be 45,000 tons of deficit this year and will keep growing. As inventories are fairly high, around just below 80 days, we think fundamentally market price will be close to the current level. For palladium, deficit is quite substantial. It will be around 1 million ounces this year and will go on growing. Since the beginning of last year, inventories reduced by 2.7 million ounces, which is one-fourth of annual consumption of palladium. So we see how palladium is being consumed. So our outlook is more positive than neutral. As to platinum, our short-term deficit period has ended, and the market is well-balanced now. In our view, this will persist in the mid-term, and we have a similar situation in the copper market. The market is well-balanced, and unlike platinum, inventories are pretty low, while 2 to 4 weeks are normal. For copper, it's a week and a half in general. So we're not expecting any shocks in the market, so our outlook is also neutral. Let's move to page 7, nickel market deficit, which was in the market, comes from the fact that the nickel consumption is growing faster than its production. And the key factors of consumption are the stainless steel, which is the biggest segment for us, and in the near future, it will be the dominant factor. As to supply, the uncertainties in the market, which showed that manifested themselves due to Indonesia and Philippines, for some time they are offset, there is more metal in the market available. On page 8, you can see charts for the steel smelting. Our stainless steel production is growing. It's the 300 grade, which contains most of nickel, and it's growing fairly quickly. Now the growth is slowing down, but nevertheless it keeps growing, so it means that nickel consumption will go up, so this rate will be retained. So we think this segment is quite healthy for us, and it will ensure nickel consumption for our benefit. Chinese consumption structure changed. As you know, they produce ferronickel for their steel industry. Steelmaking industry is related to the availability of ore. Philippines had a shutdown of production due to the order of the Minister of Mineral Resources. Partly production resumed, so supplies will go up, but the first quarter of 2017 was not that high. So nickel market will be balanced by the supplies of metal. You can see on page 9 that for traditional producers of nickel from sulfide feedstock, the investment cycle is at its low stage. We're past the peak of CAPEX, and due to unfavorable environment, companies try to reduce CAPEX as much as possible. It affects output. The response is not immediate, but after a few years, we can see that production started to slow down. Because in underground mining, you need some investment in order to keep it flat. On the right side, on the chart, we can compare us to our peers. There are some reasons, such as technical issues, upgrade, or shutdown of loss-making capacities, but you can see the picture in general, that reduction is almost 50,000 this year. So if the price is the same, we think that the trend will persist. In the Asia-Pacific region, we show data from the Philippines and Indonesia. As to Indonesia, it mitigated its ban on ore exports. They have new permits for exports, but it is related to low content of nickel, and higher quality ore should be processed in the country. But anyway, it gives more supply in the market, which is supplied to China. As the Philippines, they are undergoing fast growth. Some capacities were shut down due to environmental concerns. The Minister for Ecology for Environmental Industry was replaced. It's difficult to expect what they are going to do next. We'll have to wait for decisions of the authorities. Let's move to page 11, PGM. Growing deficit for palladium is related to industrial consumption and investment demand for the metal. During the reporting period, stocks increased by 260,000 ounces, which is very different from the platinum market, where there is a reduction of consumption and there is an outflow of metal from ETF funds. So there is a diesel gate, and the market's opinion that the share of diesel-fueled cars will go down and the gas-fueled cars will go up. So the market's car industry will not be consuming platinum a lot. It will be refocusing to palladium. Now that historically production in the South Africa grew by 5 to 6% per year during recent years, due to low prices and trade union issues, production started to reverse, and it's close to the nickel industry in terms of trends. Page 12, we see the key factors in our car industry, our key consumer of platinum groups. We can see that car production will go up in the near future, but the share of diesel cars is going down, which is favorable for palladium, but it's negative for platinum. Hybrid cars are gaining momentum, which is good for both metals, but mainly for palladium. The share of SUVs is going up. It's positive again for palladium. They are mainly gas driven and have a large engine. We have tougher requirements and standards for exhausts. And in the European Union, they are moving from laboratory tests to real tests, which increases demand for metal. And now, electricity-driven cars, is very popular in the market, but it's not affecting our PGM segment, because the growth of this electric cars is not affecting the share of internal combustion engines, traditional cars. So on the page 13, you can see that the key consumer is China, which is the key market for all our metals. On the right side of the page, you can see the breakdown by the type of engine. The gasoline is the leading one. The diesel share is going down. And in the mid to long term, this trend will continue. And the hybrid cars and electric cars are increasing, which will be positive for our share, our basket of metals, our metal portfolio. Page 14 shows changes in environmental standards for gas, exhaust, for emissions. China is trying to catch up with the European Union in terms of environmental standards. In China and India, the share of diesel cars is smaller than compared to Europe. So they use more palladium as a catalyst. Page 15 demonstrates data on the European market. Germany is the most representative market. And the diesel engine share is declining quite rapidly, which reduces demand for platinum, while hybrid cars actually increase demand for PGM. Because they have a combined cycle and it reduces the temperature of emissions, and it requires more precious metals to purify emissions. Page 16, you can see our outlook for copper markets. China is the key, still the key to demand driver. Outside China, the consumption is flat, so it's the main factor for us. The market is quite mature, it's quite sustainable, so we do not expect any major changes there. As to balance in the markets, on page 17, you can see emergencies, interruptions in production. They meet mathematical expectations. It's a multi-year average. The market is fairly balanced for a considerable period, so the market is well balanced. Even in the previous year, the profit of 290 was not material. When we move to page 18, you can see the summary chart, how different types of transport of vehicles affect the metal market. And irrespective of various technologies, you can see that they are all beneficial for our portfolio of metals. They all demand PGM and nickel and copper. Thank you. And I pass the floor again to Sergei Malyshev. I'll tell you about the financial performance. Let's go to page 20. I'll start with the analysis of our revenue from metals sales. In the reporting period, sales of key metals reduced. You can see it on the chart that for nickel and platinum reduction amounted to 27% and 16%, while palladium and copper by 9% and 3% respectively. The reason was two factors. Increased base of the first half year 2016 due to the inventory of metals, and a temporary reduction of production due to our the configuration of production capacities. Specifically, nickel sales was due to low margin feedstock, due to transfer of our Finland to Russian feedstock. Palladium gained most in price by 45%, so our revenue from metal sales increased by 9% to $3.9 billion. Nickel's share in revenue reduced from 36% to 27%, while palladium, vice versa, increased to 30%, which made palladium the leader in terms of revenue share for the company. In general, our three metals, nickel, copper, and palladium, have almost equal shares in revenues, which proves Nordnickel's resistance to price risks due to diversification of our metal portfolio. Next page, please. You can see our revenue breakdown by metals. It corresponds to our general revenue trend. It's a positive contribution of price and a negative impact of reduction of sales volumes. Revenue from nickel and platinum reduced by 17 and 14% respectively, while revenue from palladium increased by 44% and copper by 18% correspondingly. Page 22, you can see the factors which had an impact on our consolidated revenues. The key driver for revenue was a 22% growth of our metal basket. The price factor had a positive impact on our revenue almost by $800 million. It offset completely the reduction in sales volumes, which amounted to $600 million versus the previous half of the year, the second half of 2016. In terms of geography, Europe is our key sales market. It accounts for 55% of revenue. Sales to Asia increased and amounted to 23%. And the U.S. market grew to 15% due to the focus of palladium sales amid considerable growth of consumption in terms of key clients, for key clients. Let's move to page 23. EBITDA declined by 3% and amounted to $1.7 billion. Macroeconomic environment increased this indicator for us by $386 million. Exchange prices accounted for $743 million of additional EBITDA, and it was partly offset by negative impact from ruble appreciation inflation. One of factors reduced our EBITDA by $352 million, including comparative effect from sales of inventories in the first half of 2016 and one-off social expenses, namely our provision for cooperation with the government of the Transbaikal territory. This is the region where we implement Gustinskaya Gok, our largest project, and the cost to develop a ski resort, Rosa Hutter, in the city of Sochi. Operational factors reduced our EBITDA by $85 million. But note the positive factor, we sold loss-making non-core assets, which brought us $13 million. As I mentioned earlier, our EBITDA margin is at the market leading level, 41% during the reporting period. Our cash operating costs, next page. These increased by 26% to $1.7 billion. These were impacted by ruble appreciation inflation, which increased our OPEX by almost $300 million. Also, our costs increased by the mineral extraction tax growth in Norilsk region, which increased our costs by $49 million. However, the MET growth offset the cancellation of export duties for PGM in September last year. Let's move to positive factors. We cut our headcount due to the shutdown of the nickel plant
and we reduced the purchase of intermediaries due to transfer of our refining capacity in Finland to Russian feedstock. Also, we increased our technology costs due to upgrade of the Talma concentrator. OPEX in the first half show the growth of 6% net of metal purchases and exchange rates impacts. Also, materials and supplies costs increased due to the upgrade of Talmax concentrator. Next page is dedicated to net working capital. In the reporting period, it recovered to $805 million, which we predicted last year. Macroeconomic environment increased our net working capital by $115 million due to the income tax debt and somewhat ruble appreciation and exchange prices. And operating factors increased by $250 million. I'm talking about the deal with Rostec. Also, our inventories of work in progress and increase it by $144 million. Also, there was an increase in copper production and seasonal navigation pause in the port of Budinka due to the spring flood. Page 36, free cash flow amounted to $512 million, which is $107 million below the first half of 2016. The reason is that diverse trends of working capital and changes in investment cost, income, and expense. Also, note that we had some proceeds from the sale of non-core assets. For example, the sale of our office building. Next page, sensitivity to ruble. As you know, a considerable share of our OPEX and CAPEX is denominated in ruble. In the first half of 2017, you can see that non-ruble costs account for 15% of OPEX and 22% of CAPEX. A high share of ruble costs makes us dependent on the ruble exchange rate. Decrease in OPEX from 25% to 15% results from the reduction of purchases of foreign feedstock and the use of Russian feedstock in Finland. At the rate of 59.1 rubles per dollar as of the 30th of June 2017, 1% change in percent change results in a change in EBITDA by $36 million, while free cash flow by $56 million. Page 28, CAPEX of the company amounted to $0.7 billion. Out of this amount, investment in Bystrensky Kok amounted to $156 million. The project is at active stage and is expected to be launched in by late 2017. Investment in Talmax concentrator amounted to $53 million. Note that we reached the design capacity in nickel and copper production. We continued our mining project and implemented and commissioned Skalisti mine. As expected in 2017, we expect $2 billion of CAPEX for the full year, out of which Bystrensky Kok will account for $0.6 billion. Next page, please. Net debt. In the reporting period, the company's net debt amounted to $5.6 billion, while net debt to EBITDA grew to 1.5 times. It was due to increase in working capital and the payout of interim dividends for 2016 in the amount of $1.2 billion. Given the final dividend payout for the full year 2016 for another $1.2 billion, net debt
grew to $6.8 billion, while net debt to EBITDA for the last 12 months grew to 1.8. I would like to highlight a few measures to optimize the debt portfolio, which we implemented in the reporting period. As you know, the company offered two issues of Eurobond for $1 billion at a coupon rate of 4.1% at a discount to the yield curve, and $500 million at a rate of 3.85, which is the lowest yield in the company's history. These public transactions set new pricing benchmarks and helps us to review bilateral credit lines for the banks by a full amount of $1.2 billion and advanced commodity supplies for $1.7 billion. Also, we repaid some originated loans for a total of $1 billion. So the originated share in the loan portfolio, in the credit portfolio, reduced from 29% as of the end of the previous year to 15%, which is quite rational amid ruble appreciation. The total effect from all of the above measures is estimated at $120 million, which reduces the growth of which offsets growth of base interest rates and ruble appreciation. Also, we signed an addendum to a loan agreement between Bystrinska GRK and Sberbank, under which Narnikin provides surety for the obligations of Bystrinska GOG. It reduced the funding cost for Bystrinska project and improved the number of non-financial covenants for loan. The company shows strong liquidity in the amount of $4.8 billion, out of which $2.6 million is cash and $2.2 billion of committed credit lines. This is sufficient for payments under debt obligations of the companies for over 4 years. That's what we meant for financial highlights, and I'm giving floor to Sergey Dychenko, Chief Operating Officer. Thank you. I'll start the overview of the key projects for Skalisty mine. We are building it in line with the schedule, and the capacities are being implemented as it was planned. So in late 2016 and early 2017, we implemented another facility of the mine. So now it's operating at a rate of 1.75 million tons per year. Yes, we are building another construction stage, and the output will be increased to 1.95 million tons. So we are following the schedule, and the design capacity for 2.4 million tons will be implemented on time. So you see we're very deep shafts, and our rates, our indicators are shown on page 31. Next big project, that's our Talmach concentrator. That's a major upgrade product. We informed you already about the completion of the first stage with the capacity of 7.7 million tons per year. We implemented a new technology. The concentrator was at the design capacity at the beginning of 2016. Now we started the second stage to increase the capacity to 10.2 million tons per year, and we introduced a completely new technology to do that. So we started to implement the project in 2016, so we reached the full capacity at the end of the last year. And now we are on track in terms of capacity ramp-up. You can see it on page
32, and we keep working on the project to upgrade the plant further up to 18 million tons per year. Currently, we are looking at the feasibility study, by early 2018, we will propose an investment decision to the board of directors to continue construction. Now we are decommissioning outdated equipment, and we bring the site to the construction availability subject to approval of investments. To page 3, our electrolysis capacities. When we shut down the plant in Norilsk plant, we moved all our refining capacities to Kola, to Murmansk region. We already spoke, told you that we finished the modernization of the first stage of nickel electrowinning electrolysis and reached 45,000 tons per year for electrode nickel. Now we are upgrading the second electrolysis section. Now it operates at 112,000 tons per year, and by late 2018 it will be moved to a new technology for leaching and we'll produce cathode nickel. The project is on track, and we should note that we implemented 42 new cells under the new technology. You can see it on page 33, the increase in our refining capacity to 145. We increase extraction rate and try to reduce work in progress and reduce our cost per unit of cathode nickel. Page 34, you can see our large-scale environmental project. We already showed you the project which relates to the copper plant and Nadezhda plant in Norilsk. Under both projects, we implemented the project design and feasibility study. We passed the state and environmental due diligence. Now we're working on alternative options for both factories, and until the year end, an investment decision will be taken on which option we will follow. Now you can see that completion of the project is expected by late of 2022, and the design capacity will be reached for both options in 2023. Now, page 35, you can see a brief overview of the Chita project. You can see that it was announced that exploration was finished, which increased our reserves in this project. Also, we announced our plans in terms of reducing, mitigating risks for the project and attracting new investors from China specifically. And also we attracted a Russian investor. And the total investments from third parties will amount to around 50%. In terms of infrastructure projects, we mentioned the railroad track which connects the site with the main railway. We are nearing completion in terms of construction. And the second infrastructure project is the construction of our power line construction, which is at the commissioning stage. Construction has already finished. So the key properties, key facilities are being constructed on schedule. We're installing them on the site, and we already started testing and piloting. So we follow the schedule and expect that by the year end, the project will start to process ore and produce the first product. Page 36, you can see the latest photographs from the site. You can see photos of flotation section and grinding mills and thickeners. And in July, our flotation and grinding sections look like this. Flotation was almost finished, and grinding mills are almost finished too. Page 37 shows our production guidance for the full year. We keep our guidance, which we announced earlier, for all of our metals. However, I would like to stress a few risks which materialized during our production plans, targets, the processing of artificial feedstock and anthropogenic feedstock. And we can see that the feedstock could be a little bit overestimated. And it may be the case that the company will have less output by 3 tons for PGM and around 3,000 tons for nickel. But we do our best to find this metal from our other sources, such as from underground mining. Poor weather conditions also had an influence, and positive temperatures in Norilsk had an impact on the Nadezhda and Nadezhda plant production, and it had an impact on our production in May and July. Now we they are developing different programs in order to close the gap to the targets. So these are the key things I meant to highlight for our production performance. And I give the floor back to Gennady Malyshev. Dear colleagues, let me finalize page. And I will tell you about our guidance. We'll keep our neutral view on nickel. We think that there will be a slight deficit in the market because stainless steel is ahead of all supplies from Indonesia and Philippines. And the exchange inventories, stock inventories, are quite high despite their declining. Copper market is well balanced. Copper price is fairly high, and its dynamics will depend on possible interruptions in supplies and demand from China. We're quite positive about palladium because we expect a substantial structural deficit amid considerable growth for the metal from the car industry. And also neutral about platinum because we expect decline in demand for this metal due to the decreasing share of diesel engines in Europe.
Our CapEx guidance is confirmed at the level of $2 billion, out of which $600 million will be used to finance the Pristinsky project. We increase our guidance for net working capital to $1.3 to $1.5 billion. And with this fact in mind, and also given the pricing environment and exchange rate environment at the level of the August, we expect that net debt to EBITDA may exceed by the year end 1.8 times. In this case, as you know, our formula of the reduced coefficient ratio will be in place, which will reduce our debt portfolio. I remind you that according to the formula, if net debt to EBITDA increases from 1.8 to 2.2, dividend will be reduced from 60% to 30% of EBITDA. With the minimum dividend payout will be $1 billion. Also, note that the dividend amount will be subject to decision taken by shareholders. This month, we are going to recommend to the Board of Directors recommendation on the interim dividends for the first half of the year, and if it's approved further by the general meeting of shareholders, we'll pay the dividends until the end of the year. Thank you. And we are ready to start the Q&A session. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I remind you, to ask a question, press star and one on your telephone keypad. And make sure your line is unmuted. If your question was answered, press star and two to remove yourself from the line. Please ask one question. I can remind you, to ask a question, press star and one on your telephone keypad. Expecting your questions. There are no questions on the Russian line, so there will be a few questions on the English line. We'll translate into Russian.
We will now take our first question from Dan Chow from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. I've got three questions, if that's okay. First one on the Sberbank facility, which is now included, now has been renegotiated with a guarantee from Norilsk. So does that mean that $800 million will now be included in the net debt number that is used to calculate net debt to EBITDA for the purposes of the dividend payout? The second one is on the working capital. Can you just confirm that your guidance is basically for roughly $600 million of further working capital outflow in the second half? And then finally, just on dividends again, can you give any indication of how the interim and the final will be structured? Will the interim dividend be roughly 50% of the expected full-year dividend, as was the case for 2016? Thank you.
This is Sergei Malashev speaking. You are right. For the first question, due to personal guarantees, the debt raised for the Pristinsky block with their bank, so it will increase.
Okay.
It will increase the ratio.
Okay, thank you.
As to the working capital, that's the right guess, and that's the total number of positive and negative factors, including Rostec, the income tax, and changes in the settlement structure for advances from our customers.
Okay.
Yes, interim dividends.
all this information cannot be shared for now. The management team hasn't proposed specific figures to the board of directors yet. It will be a bit later.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Daniel Major from UBS. Please go ahead. Please go ahead. Caller, your line is open. Please ensure your mute function is turned off.
Hi there. Sorry about that. Yes. Can I follow up on the question about working capital? It seems like a substantial increase back to 1.3 to 1.5 billion. Can you tell us exactly what the main drivers of that are? That's the first question. Second question is, it appears from the presentation you intend to pay the interim dividend in the 2017 calendar year. Why has that changed? That hasn't been what you've done in previous years, as far as I'm aware. And the third question, I've seen on the news wires comments about the purchase and resale of Palladium. Can you confirm that that is a purchase and resale and you haven't built strategic stocks in Palladium during the period? Thanks.
In the previous answer, I already mentioned the factors influencing changes in the working capital. I could reiterate. These are the income tax payments to the budget, also changes in the costs, changes in inventories. The Rostech transaction will have a major impact on this indicator. The net working capital at the end of the year, and settlements with our customers for advance payments, which we are reducing now due to fairly high cost of this financing. So we're replacing it with bank financing. So the reasons for the half of the year interim dividends instead of 9 months. Here, it's difficult to give comments. It will be decided on by shareholders. We don't have indications yet, but it will be more comfortable for shareholders and for investors who will receive money a bit earlier. And as to purchases of Palladium, we can repeat that we purchased Palladium to our Palladium fund. And the fund was established in order to absorb the metal, collect the metal from the market, and to resell it further to our clients under our current contracts. And it's not for profiteering purposes. So almost all of metals which we purchase, we sell it pretty quickly. So we do not pile up strategic inventories.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Can I just follow up one question on the working capital? Would it be fair to assume that the 1.3 to 1.5 is the sort of sustainable level of working capital, or will you unwind some of that as you process the Rostec concentrates over the next 3 or 4 years?
That's a good question. Thank you. We think that this net working capital is not our target. That's due to a number of factors, and in 2018 we're going to reduce it to our comfortable level of below 1 billion.
Great. Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Alex Collins from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the presentation. Actually, a number of my questions have already been asked, but I just wanted a clarification because I couldn't quite hear one of the answers. Looking at the guarantees for the Cheetah project, these are off balance sheet and have now been guaranteed by Norilsk. Are these to be included when calculating dividends in line with the dividend policy? That's my only question. Thanks.
Yes, with the surety, the debt from Sberbank will be included in the calculation of net debt to EBITDA for dividend purposes.
Okay, and just that's excellent color. And just one follow-up on that as well. So when calculating the dividend, is it the end-of-period leverage which determines the dividend payout? So, for example, for the 2017 dividend payout, that will be determined by the end of 2017 leverage. And this, obviously, this dividend will be paid in the following year in 2018.
Да, все правильно понимаете.
Yes, you are right.
We will now take our next question from Dominic O'Kane from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hello. Two questions for me. Just please could you provide some guidance on the likely expected social costs in H2 and maybe if you have the visibility for 2018 also. And then just coming back to the dividend, the leverage of the company is creeping up over the last couple of years, and I think you've given very clear guidance on the level of payout with respect to the leverage multiples. But could you just maybe comment on where you're currently thinking about maximum tolerance for net debt EBITDA, i.e. 2.5 or 3 times? Do you think, are you still comfortable with paying out 30% of EBITDA?